Welcome to Chapter 76 of the Kinsmen Die podcast, home of fantasy fiction based on Norse mythology that's written and read by me, Matt Bishop. In this podcast, I read my first novel, Kinsmen Die, one chapter at a time. And with each episode, when it makes sense, I provide some commentary about the source materials I've referenced in the text. This week, we're back with Odin, who we'd last seen disguising himself as a dead warrior he'd plucked from the ship of the dead. Odin had then ridden to where Loki's dead wife, the witch Angerboda, was buried. Why Angerboda? Because Odin found his uncle, Mimir, trapped inside Angerboda's house. And in that house, he discovered the remnants of an old ritual that appeared to involve Angerboda's children, Fenrir the wolf, Jorm the serpent, and Hel. Then, Odin unearthed a memory of Loki threatening him, his family, and everything he'd built. So Odin thinks that Loki and Angerboda are somehow involved in what's happening to Baldur, those dreams that he's having. That's why Odin is here. But remember what we've learned in Frigg's chapter, that a witch named Yelena may have been involved in damaging Baldur's mistletoe. So with that recap out of the way, let's rejoin Odin. Chapter 76, Odin. The wayfarer stood on the hill's crown, which was bare except for the barrow of gray stones. A chill wind stirred his cloak and blew wisps of mist down toward the river behind him. He'd left his nag, cropping sparse grass by a stand of trees that had retreated from the hilltop. The rain-slick cliffs of stone behind where Hel dwelled loomed in the far distance. The wayfarer knelt, removed his wide-brimmed hat, and ducked under his satchel's strap. He rummaged for the four witch lamps, lit each of them in turn, and set them in a large square. Then he drew his knife from the small of his back and cut deep, wide runes into the sparse grass and wet soil just behind each witch lamp. He placed his token, Baldur's silver torque, in front of the barrow. He rubbed his sleeve across his mouth and walked back to his horse. He grabbed a wineskin, took a long swallow, and trudged back up the hill. He rummaged for the second token, a hammered golden disc the size of his palm. At the center of the disc was a design of three interlocking triangles. Runes etched into the edge spiraled in to touch the corner of one triangle. As they had on the road, the whispers in his mind surfaced.
"Read the charm. Ask the questions. Tell your story."
Then, like a whale that had finished breathing, the voice sank back down. The wayfarer raised his staff in his right hand. His left held the disc before him. He began to read the runes aloud. His voice was hoarse and weak, but it strengthened as he spoke. The dank wind rose, whipping around the hilltop. He shouted the last runes, sending them out as a fisherman might cast a line. When he finished, the wind subsided. He dropped the disc and waited. A mist rose from the barrow and coiled around the witch lamps like a sea serpent. The runes he'd cut in the earth flared with golden light. They kept the mist contained. The mist tested each one, then swirled toward the barrow and coalesced into the shape of a tall, lean woman, garbed in a white dress with her hair pulled back from a gaunt face. The woman knelt and, with long-fingered hands, lifted Baldur's torque. She turned it this way and that, inspecting it closely. She spoke, words falling like slabs of ice into the sea.
"Long was I dead, snowed under, smitten with rain, and drenched with dew. Why have you, whoever you are, made me travel back along the troublous road?"
The wayfarer stood straight, staff in his right hand, hat pushed back.
"Call me Vegtam, great lady, for I have traveled all my life."
"You would have me call you Wayfarer, then? That's not a fit name for an enchanter. You know my name, else you couldn't have summoned me. What may I call you?"
"Your pardon, great lady. I may have spoken the words, but I'm no enchanter. Another's power drew you."
She narrowed her eyes and then darted toward him, hands extended like the talons of a plunging raptor. The Wayfarer stumbled back and raised his hand to defend himself. The air between himself and the charging spirit flared golden, and she was flung back. She darted forward again and crashed into the unseen line between the two witch lamps. Again she was flung back in a shower of golden sparks. She dragged one white hand all around the barrier, sparks followed in her wake. When she had made a complete circuit, she drifted back to the square center.
expression thoughtful. "So, Vegtam, the father of enchanters taught you well."
"He taught me nothing. He gave me detailed instructions and a token, much like that one there," the wayfarer said with a shrug. He gestured toward the silver torque on the dead grass. Angerboda looked down at it, then back up at him.
"And what did he ask of you, Vegtam?"
"As you well know, great lady, he commands the dead. He didn't ask."
"He treats the living in much the same way."
"That I wouldn't know. I lived out the arc of my nights in another land."
The spirit drifted closer, expression interested. "And where are you from, Vegtam?"
"My people issue from his brother's loins. We live upon the coast, far from where the father of enchanters sits watch."
"How curious."
She drifted forward until she stood opposite him.
"You know, we find ourselves in a similar situation. Both required to do something we would not, had we a choice. May I have your name? You have mine, after all."
A wide grin spread across the wayfarer's face. He shook a finger at her.
"After he told me the questions he wanted answered, he specifically warned me not to tell you my name, great lady. Not that it would do you much good, dead as I am."
Angerboda's eyes narrowed. She leaned in closer still.
"You are Einherjar, then?"
The spark of Odin deep within the wayfarer twitched at her words.
"What? Einherjar?"
Her lips pursed and she cocked her head slightly, as if straining to hear a whisper. The wayfarer gave voice to Odin's thoughts.
"I don't understand, great lady. Einherjar? Those are his warriors, living men and women, while I am..."
"But you are Asir, yes?"
she asked, waving a translucent hand toward him.
"And he plucked you from the ship of the dead as it sailed here to my daughter's realm?"
"You know he did, great lady."
A wicked grin spread across her face.
"I could ask my daughter for your name. She could learn it and then give it to me. And once I had it, I could find out why you're really here."
"I'll tell you exactly why I'm here, great lady, if you'll let me," he said, spreading his hands wide. "And besides, what you threaten would take time. Time enough for me to tell the Valfather of what you attempt. I believe his anger would be boundless, as would his vengeance."
Angerboda eyed him sharply, then shrugged.
"What else can he do to me? He's already taken everything I loved."
"I don't know your story, I'm sorry to say. I only know what I've been required to do."
Then he added,
"But in my experience, there's always something worse that could be done."
"And what is your task, Vegtam?"
"The Valfather wants me to ask you about his son, Baldur."
Her expression gave nothing away.
"Why ask me?"
"I only know what he told me to ask."
The spirit pursed her lips and slowly walked back toward the barrow, her pale feet leaving the barest impression on the cold, wet ground. She lifted Baldur's silver torque.
"I knew whose this was the moment I looked at it. But tell me, wayfarer, why should I answer the Valfather's questions after what he did to me and mine?"
That spark of Odin deep down within the wayfarer again stirred at her words.
"Whose it was? My son lives. Ask her what she meant."
Again, Angerboda's head cocked to one side as if she were trying to hear something far away. Without warning, she flung the torque at him. The silver missile flew straight through the barrier. He caught it neatly in his free hand.
"You have no more choice than I do, great lady. He's given me the power to compel you, should you refuse."
He thrust the torque into his satchel.
"Just now you said, whose this was. What did you mean? Baldur still lives."
"Of course he does," she said easily, smiling as she drifted closer. "Tell me, wayfarer, why should I answer questions about Baldur? Or about anything? I am unwilling to speak and would again be still."
"That's not good enough," the spark of Odin said, drifting higher.
The wayfarer shook his head and extended his hand.
"Great lady, I am not permitted to leave here without answers. True answers to all the questions the Valfather bade me ask. I don't wish to use the power he gave me, but I will. I fear his wrath more than your daughter's.
Nothing he says can be trusted. She crossed her arms and lifted her chin.
He dug in the bag and brought the torque back out. You may have this as a gift. Ungerboda laughed. Crows fled into the air from the withered trees surrounding the glade.
And what would I do with it? I am unwilling to speak and would again be still.
The wayfarer shoved the torque back into his bag even as the spark of Odin inside him burned hotter. The wayfarer spoke a word and golden light shone from the tip of his staff. He took one step forward and held the staff higher, as if the spirit before him couldn't see it.
A smile played about Angerboda's lips. The carrot having failed, you switch to the stick. How like your master? A third time I say it. I am unwilling to speak, and would again be still.
A long moment of stillness hung over the hilltop, like a dark bird riding high on the winds. The flame of Odin's anger inside the wayfarer's mind dimmed, and he lowered the staff. Hold off for a moment. This is the time to offer her the story of your death. That which I saw in your memories, which so intrigued me. If that doesn't work, use the power I gave you. A thought occurs to me, great lady. Perhaps you would instead be interested in a trade.
The witch said nothing. She stared at the wayfarer, arms crossed beneath her breasts.
I offer you this, the story of my death. In return, you tell me what you see of Baldur's doom. Tale for tale. True telling for true telling.
Angerboda began drifting back toward him. Her expression was thoughtful, her gaze piercing. Finally, she said, Tell me, wayfarer, why should I care about your death?
The wayfarer nodded slowly, but inside those memories, Odin smiled. We have her now. Tell her why I chose you. I am an Aesir, but as I said, my people are descended from Vili, one of the Valfather's brothers. I was born to a seafaring clan. My people and I plied the coasts of a new land for more than 200 winters before the Allfather found us.
Interesting. I knew that Vili and Vi had left, but not where they had gone. Even so, you offered the tale of your death, not your life.
The wayfarer smiled and raised a hand. I know. I'm coming to that. Have you heard of the exile?
And the war that preceded it?
Yes, I know of it, she replied, drifting still closer. Well, I know where the Svartalfar ended up. The wayfarer's smile became a grin. I know, because it was they who killed me.
She pointed at him, her expression fierce. If you lie, I will know.
I will not lie, the wayfarer said.
Do we have a bargain, then?
Eyes narrowed, jaw clenched, she nodded. Speak the words, then, wise woman. You know how this works. I offer the true story of my death in exchange for your true telling of Baldur's doom.
And I offer my true telling of Baldur's doom in exchange for the true story of your death.
The deal is struck.
The wayfarer drove his staff into the dank earth. He tucked his cloak beneath him and sat cross-legged on the ground and scooped up his discarded wineskin. He took a long pull, wiped his mouth, and began.
The Wayfarer's Tale.
Before I died and ended up here, the wayfarer said, with a gesture that encompassed both the hilltop and the drab forest below, I sailed, traded, and raided all along the coast of my native land. 100 Aesir and 3 ships followed me. Aegir and Ron sped my wooden steeds across the waters for many winters. I was never too ruthless nor too kind, and I sacrificed often. Many a bog and lake are home to the bent swords and shattered spears of my enemies, offerings to Ron. To Aegir, I offered those few prisoners I took. Many times I gave my own blood just as my followers and kinsmen did, and some gave their lives. But their names lived on, and our reputations grew in the telling.
He fell silent for a moment, composing his thoughts. Memories swamped him like a foundering skiff. Then, As if he felt a favorable wind at his back, he set his hand on the tiller, nodded to the spirit, and said,
"And so I begin the tale of my death. We had just raided a fortified town and were fleeing back down the wide, fast-moving river we had sailed up from the sea. We had won some treasure, but the town had fought harder than we expected, and their scythe Conor had sent a towering column of spinning wind and water after us."
"Their sorcerers conjured a cyclone, eh?"
"She was strong," Angerboda said.
"Was she Alvar? That sounds more like their sorcery."
"No, she was an Aesir. I only mentioned the scythe Conor and her storm because I believe it related to what happened to us. You see, it chased my ships down the river. The air boomed with the storm's voice. Lightning crawled across a sky that ran from black to a greenish, sickly yellow. When the storm struck, the river itself heaved like a bucking stallion. Warm, white water poured in through the shields. We rose high, shuddered sideways, and then a heartbeat later we slammed down again. Our mast went by the board and we began to spin, my men sliding and stumbling across the flexing deck. To larboard, one of my companion ships rolled broadside to the wind and foundered, just like that."
The wayfarer snapped his fingers. "To starboard, my other ship shot round backwards, slammed into the wreckage of her sister, and began sinking. And we were about to follow that same awful course. Until I cried out for Aegir and Ron to remember my many sacrifices and spare us a watery doom. Maybe they heard, for the winds diminished and the river calmed. I took on what survivors I could find, shipped a new steering board, and manned the remaining oars alongside those men we'd pulled from the water. And so we few survivors continued our flight downriver to the sea." The wayfarer fell silent, caught up his wineskin, and took a long pull, head tipped back.
"Odd that you drink, seeing as how you're dead," Angerboda said.
He lowered the wineskin and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, then replaced the plug and met her cool gaze.
"The Valfather said it would keep me whole during my task. I don't know why." He shrugged. "I'd do so even if it spilled from the hole in my belly. That reminds me of my living days."
Angerboda replied with a smile that could have meant anything.
"The Valfather did have a fondness for wine. He never consumed anything but wine, at least as long as I knew him."
"I never had that pleasure of knowing him while I lived, I mean," the wayfarer said. "Shall I continue?"
"Oh, by all means."
She drifted backward and gestured with one pale hand, even as her smile returned. The wayfarer sketched a bow.
"The wind had left us, but a thick mist took its place. We couldn't see an oar's length beyond the ship, and it had grown hot, hotter than it had been when we sailed up the river. But we were hard at work, and so didn't think too much of it. The current took us fast toward the sea, which was a good thing, since most of my warband were knotting and splicing the ropes, plugging holes and shipping new oars. The sailmaker plied his craft, too, though we needed a mast. The trip downriver seemed to take longer than it should have, but time seemed fuzzy in that mist, and we were busy. When we finally reached the delta, a huge stone outcropping loomed from the mist. It had not been there when we sailed up the river. I exchanged a long glance with my Kjolar. That's when we knew something was very wrong. But what could we do? I'd lost most of my warband, my ship needed more repairs, and the townsfolk might have set out after us. So we put the ship before what wind there was and rowed down the coast, or maybe up it, who knew at that point. We rowed all through that long, hot day. When the mist finally burned off, it became even more clear that we were lost, in every sense of the word. The shores were thick with a heavy green foliage, and even thicker with strange, unknown sounds. Shapes swung through the trees, seeming to track our progress. And merciless Sol was hot on our backs. Eventually, Sol rode down beyond the forest. Several of my warband chose that time to question my decisions, so I put their corpses over the side in offering to Ron. Their bodies were quickly torn apart by spears-long, scaly-backed monsters that bumped and jostled our ship long after they devoured our dead. To starboard, the land began leaning away from us to form a great bay. In the failing light, I spied a smooth, sandy shore, so I took us in. Setting foot on an unknown shore blanketed by a dark forest turned out to be a bad decision. But at the time, we needed water and food.
And a mast.
That too. The ship beached, we armed ourselves and ventured out into the forest. We didn't go far, gathering what fallen limbs we could for a fire. I wanted to build a wall between us and the forest. We felled several trees, working to finish before Sol entirely fled, and dragged them back to make several fires and rude barriers. There were maybe 3 ships' lengths between our camp, just beyond the high water mark, and the tree line. Come dawn, we'd deal with our ship. The wayfarer snorted and looked up at Moni, which hung like a silver coin above the scraggly trees. As it turned out, none of us would make it to the dawn.
You have my interest, wayfarer, Unger Boda said. Take a moment, if you need it, or perhaps another drink?
He smiled and doffed his hat. No, great lady, I'm fine. But I do appreciate your concern.
She smiled in reply and mimicked his gesture.
He settled his hat back on his head and gestured up toward the moon. Once Moni's face had risen full above the sea, the forest went deathly quiet. The only sound were the waves pounding the shore. We knew something was coming. We formed a shield wall and began withdrawing to the ships. We hadn't even reached the waves before massive beasts, unlike anything I'd seen, stepped from the forest. Armored, all scales and teeth and claws. They were arrayed in a long line before us and to either side. I stopped counting at 50. Sharp-eyed Tothir and my crew gasped and pointed.
They carry riders, Jarl.
I looked again. Riders indeed. One of the beasts lurched forward. A man-shaped figure slid off its back and came slightly closer. It stood in the open, clearly staring down at us. It said nothing. My heart pounding in my chest, the sea's scent thick in my nose, I stepped forward and spread my arms wide, hands open. We were shipwrecked, I called out. The wayfarer smiled and met Unger Boda's gaze. Fool that I was.
Those were the Svartalfar, I take it?
Oh yes, though I didn't know it at first.
But Yig and the Golden Vanir had exiled them to another realm, she said, frowning. You're saying you ended up there yourself?
I'm not sure what happened, great lady. All I know is what I told you. The river we sailed down was not the same one we sailed up. And that coast we clung to?
The wayfarer laughed, the sound short and sharp.
It wasn't the same. I spent my life at sea, and all along the coast of my birth. I went farther than most, found new lands. But I never saw anything like that. Ever. Until that storm.
Curious, she said. And so how did you die?
You still want to know?
Certainly, wayfarer. You have my interest, as I said. And more than that, we struck a bargain.
The wayfarer inclined his head, raised his wineskin in salute, and took another pull. The figure stood there by his beast, staring at us. A familiar creak reached my ears, and moments later, a heavy cart trundled into the gap in their lines. It was pulled by another of those armored creatures, except this one walked on 4 legs. It looked as if they had put a small forge on the cart. Flames danced behind a grating, and warm yellow light fell across the sand. A man figure passed through that light, walking toward the first figure, its shadow long and narrow across the sand. Behind me, my warband stirred. They'd guessed what was happening. Had we not raided 100 towns together? Sometimes a town would strike a bargain and pay us to leave, treasure, food, sometimes women. If they seemed too strong, I'd agree. But they always made some show of force. That's what was happening here. But the towns that preferred to talk always sent someone forward after the display. And these folks had yet to do that. Battered as we were, facing these scaled beasts and their riders, I suspected we would have to fight, and probably die. But I took the other option.
You ran?
Oh yes, the wayfarer said with a big grin. Tried to, anyway. To my warband I whispered, fall back to the ship, let's get her afloat. As we backed away, I kept my eyes and ears on the pair of figures silhouetted before the forge wagon. They might have been arguing, arms swinging up to gesture toward us. Run, before they make up their minds, I said. We turned and ran, maybe 20 yards to the ship. We'd beached her high to be safe. Free the rolling logs, I yelled, and a few men jumped to it. The rest of us set hands on her sides and began to push. The wayfarer paused. You know that sound a fire makes when it first catches? Ungerboda nodded. Well, imagine that sound passing directly overhead. A ball of fire struck our ship square amidships and burst. We fell back with a yell. Even before the second fireball hit, my ship was ablaze. I spun round and now saw only one figure standing before the forge cart. He reached back as if he was about to throw a spear, and the fire in the cart dimmed. Then he made a throwing motion, and fire swept out of the wagon and streaked toward us. Then the forge fire danced merrily until he threw again.
Imaginative use of Sather, she mused. And what did those figures look like? How did you know they were Svartalfar?
Oh, I'm nearly there, great lady. I didn't last much longer. He took another quick drink. A pair of my sailors died when the ship went up, burned alive. My warband had numbered 128 before the raid on the town. 36 stood with me now, staring at our ship's flaming ruin, the heat baking the wetness from our clothes. Well, boys, we've had quite the time together, I said, meeting each man's eyes. I knew them like brothers. I wouldn't trust them with a widow's fortune, but with my life? Sure. Cattle die, kinsmen die, and so will we, on this beach no less. But one thing that will never die is the fame of our deeds. I will make sure of it, I said to them.
And so you kept your promise, wayfarer,
Ungerboda murmured. I drew my axe as a last fireball impacted the burning ship. I'm going to kill at least one of these bastards. Are you with me? He raised his hand as he'd done his axe. I didn't wait for them to answer. I spun and charged toward the tree line, feet sinking in the sand as I ran. From the shouts and grunts of effort, it sounded as if many of the warband had followed. My eyes were still dazzled by the light from the burning ship, but as I ran, my vision cleared. The line of riders to my left rippled like a stirring snake. Their leader shouted something, and the whole line of warriors charged us. I say us because my warband had caught up with me. Most of them, from what I could tell in those few heartbeats of time between their forming a small shield wall with me at its center. The beasts charged us, heads lowered, weaving back and forth like swimming snakes. Their riders were perched high, and each leveled a bright pointed spear. A dozen in succession hit our attempt at a shield wall and went right through it. My shield shattered on my arm. Broke my arm, too, I remember screaming out as the world flew out from under me. The clawed foot of one of those beasts slammed into my head. My warband's cries rang around me as they fell, just as I did. I ended up on my back, staring up at Moni's blank, pale face, the bastard. I wheezed for breath, twitching like a turtle trying to regain its feet. I blinked, and a second, much closer, pale face loomed into view above me. Large eyes that reflected the light gazed down into mine. A foot hammered into my side, and I rolled with it, my broken shield arm screaming. But I came up to my feet, scooping up an axe as I did. The figure before me was tall, stocky, and pale like the underbelly of a snake. He wore a mix of black armor that glinted dully in places but otherwise seemed to be leathers. His lips were a tight line across his face. In one hand, he held a long-handled weapon with a spiked metal ball on the end. His hair was dark and pulled tight against his head. One of his compatriots came up beside him. His head was completely covered, and large gems with many facets glittered where his eyes should have been. The second one had weapons on his belt, but none in his hands. The first warrior raised his weapon in challenge and shuffled across the sand toward me. while the hooded one moved forward behind the first. As the first one got close, his spiked ball swinging up, I spat blood in his face. He dodged most of it. He was quick, but I kicked him in the stomach. He folded over and I smashed my axe into his spine. I ripped it out and spun into an attack that the second hooded figure blocked with a small shield. From that figure's other hand, a cold bit of night lashed out and buried itself in my belly. I remember looking down at a black blade. When the warrior twisted his sword, I gasped and met his eyes. They were large and shiny, like silver platters, though they were hidden behind those large blue gems. He shoved me off his sword, and I fell back onto the sand. I don't know how long I lay there, clutching the hole in my stomach and staring up at the moon until a new figure stepped into view above me. This new figure kicked me in the ribs and then squatted to hiss, "Tell your Valfather and his Vanir bootlickers that Atri sends his greetings. We are coming for him." The wayfarer stood and leaned on his staff. I must have died then, for I remember nothing else until Odin pulled me from Ron's ship, gave me my task, and set my feet upon the road here. And thus have I upheld my end of our bargain.
Well, folks, that was chapter 76 of Kinsmen Die. I hope you enjoyed it. This may be my favorite chapter in the book. The scene itself is based on Baldur's Drama, Baldur's Dreams, from the Poetic Edda. I used some of the language from that poem, the part about being snowed on with snow, and the troublous road, which is the Bellows translation. I also used the unwilling I speak and would again be still formula. The wise woman in the poem, however, is not Angerboda. I made that change because it made sense for my story. In the poem, Odin does disguise himself as Vegtam, which means wayfarer. I also decided to link in Odin's missing brothers, Vegtam being a descendant of Vili, as a way to refer back to Odin's opening chapters. The part where we go into the wayfarer's tale is actually a bit of backstory, as it refers to the exile of the Svartalvar, and we do see the Svartalvar in all their dark glory. This is also a potential tie-in to another Svartalvar-centric story that I've partially written, and I thought it would be a good way to tie in something that was described in the previous chapter, where Odin chose this particular individual as a way to get Angerboda to answer questions truthfully about what was going on with Baldur. Next week, we're back with Frigg. Until then, if you have the time and inclination, please rate or review the podcast. That helps boost the show's visibility, as does sharing it. As always, I'm going to read from both the Bellows and Larrington translations of the Havamal. Note that this stanza is number 76 in Bellows, but Larrington and Codrataff have it as verse 78, as does Crawford's translation. I haven't found an explanation as to why they are ordered differently, but this ordering straightens itself out in the subsequent stanzas. Bellows, verse 76. Among Fitjung's sons I saw well-stocked folds. Now bear they the beggar's staff. Wealth is as swift as a winking eye. Of friends, the falsest it is. Larrington, verse 78. Fully stocked folds I saw for Fitjung's sons. Now they carry a beggar's staff. Wealth is like the twinkling of an eye. It is the most unreliable of friends. The translation notes state that Fitjung is a made-up name. It just means basically random wealthy dude. Thanks for listening.